political week, of course. There's a new leader of Fine Gael, there's a new Taoiseach in Simon Harris, and he's put together a new cabinet, at least on the Fine Gael side of the House. One of those to benefit from promotion is the former minister for the OPW, Patrick O'Donovan. He has now been elevated to the Department of Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science. And Minister O'Donovan's with us online. Minister, good morning to you and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Gerry, and good morning to all your listeners.
Congratulations. First senior minister for Limerick for 7 years. You must be delighted.
Yeah, no, look, it's a huge honour. I suppose I went into the Dáil in 2011 with people like Brendan Griffin, and I've been very fortunate to serve for the last 8 years as a Minister of State. So to get called up to be made a cabinet minister, a full cabinet minister, is it's something that's not going to happen that many times in somebody's life, and certainly look, for me and my family, my supporters, the people of County Limerick, and indeed look, the people of the region, because I appreciate that I have more than just a constituency role. There's a big regional role as well that I must fulfil, and for all of those I'm delighted that there's been recognition of the work that has been done over many years.
Are you confident you'll have the time to get into it? The opposition party is saying, look, this is just a rearranging of deck chairs, 10 months out at most from an election, and that not much will be done.
Look, the opposition are going to say what the opposition are going to say anyway. I mean, I could probably have predicted all of the stuff that was on the printers before I was even appointed by the president. You know, the same old tired lines. You can achieve an awful lot if you set your mind to it. If you just want to sit on the sidelines and shout and roar at a problem, it's an entirely different thing. And in that context, I just want to thank the Kerry deputies who supported my nomination as Minister for Further and Higher Education, Norma Foley and Brendan Griffin. You shouting at a problem doesn't make it go away. You know, you have to be prepared to roll up your sleeves and go into government, muscle down, and do the things that matters. I mean, it'd be very easy if we all just gave the standard copy and paste, shouting and roaring kind of excuses to difficult problems, but that's not the reality in any walk of life, whether you're running a small business, whether you're running a household income, or whether you're running a country. And being an observer in politics is something that I could never understand, that people set out to have an aspiration for, to be just a commentator or just a very articulate but vocal opponent of everything. I don't know why anyone would be motivated by that. My motivation now is to do my utmost for the period of time ahead for the further and higher education sectors across a range of areas, universities, technical universities, institutes of education, colleges of education, DETBs, and working with the overlap that's there with the Department of Education and giving people the best opportunity to either skill or reskill to make sure that the deficits that are there in the economy and the deficits that are there in society and the opportunities that can be provided will be provided.
What are the biggest challenges, do you think, particularly, I suppose, with regards to the financial situation that several of the colleges that you've oversight of now find themselves in? TU Dublin in trouble, University of Limerick trouble, big governance issues at a number of those places.
Yeah, so look, I suppose yesterday I set off to meet the senior officials in the department, and you know, I'm a former member of the Public Accounts Committee, and I've you know, a lot of the issues that you've articulated there are well known through the media. I suppose the other side of it is that the Higher Education Authority has been recently beefed up by the now Taoiseach Simon Harris to take a much greater role in terms of the public's monies and oversight, so they need to be given space with regard to each of the individual institutions that you've named. But there's others that have no governance issues that have been reported and are getting on with the job of building out massive modern infrastructure for students and for academic staff alike and for communities, and making a big impact in their local areas like MTU is. So I think this is an exciting area. It's an area that I long time ago, when I was only a Garsoon advocated that there should be a Minister for Science and Technology sitting at the cabinet table. Little did I ever think that it would be myself. And I suppose that's an area that I really looking forward to get my teeth stuck into, as somebody who studied chemistry and maths myself a long time ago. And I know that there are a number of multinationals now spread across the regions in Kerry, in Limerick, in Cork and elsewhere, that are making a massive contribution to Ireland and our economy and our communities, but they will require people to work on them into the future. So we as a department will have a major challenge in terms of encouraging young men and women, young boys and girls from second and third year in secondary school to consider STEM, and so that by the time they come to us, that overlap is seamless, and that means collaboration with the Department of Education and the ETBs around the promotion of the career prospects that are out there for people that they might not even consider at the moment.
Yeah, one of the stated ambitions in MTU Kerry is, and another legislation has been changed to allow this, to borrow money to build student accommodation that is needed. Is that something you'll be looking at supporting?
So one of the first people to contact me after my elevation was Jimmy Deanahan, and the first line in his message after congratulations was to get me down to MTU, and I'm going to do that as soon as possible. Look, I think the technological universities have given a massive uplift, not only psychologically and everything else, but they've also given a massive uplift in terms of regional recognition of the degrees that are coming out of these universities. And as a result, they're going to have increased levels of pressure because they're going to have increased levels of demand. More students are going to want to go to them. The course offerings are going to increase. And as a result, the accommodation needs are going to go through the roof as well. And I suppose coming from the Office of Public Works, where we build things and build a lot of things, I have a particular interest in the capital works side of the department. And with the senior officials yesterday, we had a long discussion around this about advancing, in many cases, not only the laboratories, the lecture theatres, the new libraries that are needed, the new car parking facilities that are needed, but accommodation is a key. It has to be a key integral part of that. Simon Harris has an awful lot of work done on it, and I think there's further that can be done in collaboration with the local authorities, the ETBs, and the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform. And look, we'll need everybody singing off the one hymn sheet, because when you bring large numbers of students into places that there previously wasn't, that involves change, and that change has to be managed. It has to be managed with the local community. It has to be managed with the local infrastructure that's there, public and private. But it provides an exciting and absolutely an unreal opportunity for cities like Limerick and towns like Tralee.
Can I ask you finally, just on a separate issue, a major vote taken in Europe yesterday, the Minister for Justice is supporting that vote and saying that it is a game changer for how we deal with international protection applicants in terms of information sharing. What's your view on the migration pact?
Well, I tell you, you mentioned the word information. Misinformation is the biggest issue that we have to contend with in this, because, again, from some of the opposition spokespersons, this will actually make it an awful lot easier for us as a country. There are very few direct flights from countries that are regarded as unsafe into Ireland. So they have to come through a third country, and most of those third countries are European Union countries. This pact, working together, sharing information, will allow us, in many cases, for those people that, you know, have clearly taken it upon themselves to come to Ireland through a third country, to possibly even have them returned to that third country and have that third country process them. So we're never going to fix this on our own. Ireland is part of through the European Union, of a 500 million person political entity. We're not going to solve this issue on our own. We're only going to solve it by our partners within the European Union, and that not only means strengthening our borders, but it also means levelling the playing field around the terms and conditions that apply to getting into Europe. But we now know that, like, if you look at some of the flashpoints in the world at the moment, and what people are escaping, in many cases they're not making this stuff up. I don't think, I remember I was on your program or somebody else, like, if we want to return somebody to Syria at the moment, who do we lift the phone to? You know, Bashar al-Assad? A lot of the countries that people are escaping from are dysfunctional. They're countries filled with hate. They're countries filled with with oppression and their countries in many cases that mirror Ireland in the 19th century. You know, by their religion, by their language, by their land ownership status, they're being driven out of their own countries in many cases. Very similar to what happened in Kerry and in West Limerick and everywhere else not too long ago, where boats were loaded in Tralee and in Limerick, and in many cases the corpses didn't even make the journey. So I think of all people that need to be have a clear immigration policy, Ireland has a good opportunity to lead this discussion, because we have skin in the game. No European country has suffered the degree of absolute eradication of a populace like we did. So we know more about it than anybody. And I think on that basis, we need to bring more empathy and sympathy and a bit less hate to the conversation. Yes, it has to be rules-based. It has to be rules-based. You can't come in and flunk the rules, and you can't come in and you know, take the country for a ride. But by the same token, of all the peoples of Europe who know what it is like to be driven out of our country because of our language, because of our religion, because of our ethnicity, it's us. And I think we have an opportunity to lead on this now, flatten the line in terms of Europe's response to migration, and lead on it, but in a fair and compassionate way to those who need fairness and compassion, and to those who are trying to scam the system, that they be returned. And you know, once it's rules based and it's fair, and people see the basis on which it's been structured, Irish people by their nature are good people, and they're sympathetic people. And every single one of us, every one of us, has somebody in the United States of America who wound up there either during the famine or in more recent times, and can trace their relations back to, you know, Kishgame or Castlemaine or wherever. Yeah. We should lead on this discussion, and I think Helen McEntee is right to take the approach she is, and I fully support it.
Okay, all right, Minister Patrick O'Donovan, we'll leave it there. But thanks to you for talking to us in the programme this morning.
Thanks, Patrick
O'Donovan there, the Minister for Higher and Further Education.